It's become that time of the year where you sit down 7 o'clock at night to get your little backside in the couch, get all comfortable because the BBL's on, and the head of the BBL's on the line now, the CEO, Anthony Everard. G'day, Anthony.
Hey, Kevin. How are you?
Good. It has become sort of the nightly ritual during the sort of Christmas, New Year, early New Year period.
Well, I'm pleased to hear you say that. It's a good ritual if you're a cricket fan and just a fan of sport generally. I think it's amazing. You know, we're only into our sixth year, but it's already become a pretty established part of summer. And I think we're 3 or 4 nights into a run of 18 consecutive games at night, so I'm glad everyone's enjoying it.
And the figures, obviously, ratings-wise, I don't know the exact thing, but I'm one of several million who are watching this.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's interesting looking at the numbers, and we realised this a couple of years ago. They tend not to vary too much depending on who's playing. I think what we're finding is that right across the country, people are tuning in good numbers, and it's about 1 million people a night. I think it varies from sort of 1 to 1.1 million every night, and those are good numbers. We're very, very pleased.
And the numbers at the grounds are there's no let up in them either.
Yeah, that's right. I think what it shows, I guess, is that people really enjoy what they're seeing. And we identified again a few years ago that there was a real opportunity, particularly for families who are looking for things to do at this time of year. The BBL is just such a great night out for families, really good value. Certainly, the price for a family ticket hasn't changed in 5 years. It's $42.50. So, the fans are voting with their feet. We had a great crowd at Spotless last night. Almost a sellout, 20,000. We'll have a great crowd at Etihad tonight, and then we've actually got 3 sellout games in a row around the New Year's Eve period. It's all going very well.
Yeah, it's the length and breadth of the country too, because Perth gets terrific crowds. And I guess the one we're really sort of getting G'd up for is the Stars Renegades game when they next clash.
Yeah, that's right. I mentioned earlier, it's amazing how quickly you can establish a tradition. And that Stars Renegades game, I think everyone remembers that great night in Melbourne earlier this year. Just over 80,000 people, and the ticket sales are on track for another crowd around that size. So look, if anyone's keen to get along to that game, and I'd encourage you to do so, it'll be a fantastic occasion. Go out and get your tickets now because they're selling very, very strongly.
Do you expect to break the record?
I think we'll go close. It's hard to tell. We do still get a reasonably sizable walk-up crowd. So, the sales are well advanced in terms of what they were this time last year for the same game. So we're pretty confident it'll be a fantastic crowd, fantastic occasion. And we've also got the WBBL match between the Stars and the Renegades earlier that afternoon. So, yeah, certainly if you're a Melbourne sports fan, get along and have a look.
Anthony, do you see that working hand in hand? Is that going to become the new kind of way that we're going to go about both the WBBL and the BBL?
I think we're sort of blessed that we can pick and choose a little bit. I was at the game at Spotless yesterday and we had a WBBL game beforehand. There was a great crowd on hand. There was probably 3,000 or 4,000 people in there to watch the WBBL. As of this weekend, we'll start having some more televised doubleheaders as well. So the Stars Renegades game that I touched on, that'll be broadcast on Channel 10 in the afternoon and then the guys later that evening. But at the same time, we also play a lot of WBBL in all sorts of different venues around the country that the Renegades have already been up to. Bendigo, the Stars had a game out at Casey Fields a couple of weeks ago. So, the WBBL is a full home and away fixture. It's 56 games, so we've got a bit more flexibility there to move it around.
And do you still want to continue to do that with it and take it out to those country areas? I mean, while it's in its sort of embryonic stages?
Oh, I think so. As I said, I think we've got a bit more content that gives us a bit more flexibility in scheduling. And, again, the crowds are voting with their feet. You know, we were actually in Albury with Dongreville places in early December, and again there were probably 3,000 or 4,000 people there watching the women's game in the morning. So it's a great spectacle. Again, only into its second year, but it's growing in popularity, and we absolutely want to make sure that as many people all around Australia can experience it live as possible.
Anthony, the obviously the one that everyone's talking about is Christmas Day. We've just gone through a Christmas Day without any sport on of any description. Is that the last one we were likely to have?
I don't think it'll be the last one. No, I think it's unlikely that we would look to schedule a game next season. And to be honest, we haven't actually even made a decision at all as to whether or not we will.
What's your thinking? What's the thinking on it at the moment?
Well, I guess what we're trying to do is get as much feedback as we can from all the different stakeholder groups. So we've done a fair bit of work internally around understanding what are all the different considerations, who are the different stakeholder groups. At the moment, we're actually doing some reasonably formal research with fans, sort of live in season. We're collecting quite a bit of data through there. And the next step will be speaking to the Players Association and the clubs themselves. I mean, we need the clubs to put their hand up to say that they're keen to host the game, and we're confident that wouldn't be a barrier.
They'd be fighting each other for the chance to have the Christmas Day game, wouldn't they?
Well, it's interesting. It was only a couple of years ago that we sent the same email out to the clubs around New Year's Eve, and credit to the Adelaide Strikers who said, yep, we'll have a go. And the rest is history in relation to that game. That's a real highlight on the sports calendar in Adelaide now. So, yeah, I think we'd be confident that clubs, if we went about it the right way, and I think that's the key, is it's not just scheduling another game for the sake of it. We'd want to make it a really special event. You know, we don't want to interrupt family traditions on that day. What we've found, and even just speaking to people as part of this conversation, is at the end of the day, families are looking for things to do. Now, whether that means they can sit down on the couch as a family and watch the BBL, or some of them might want to come along and attend the game live, it would have to be a really special occasion. We may contemplate, you know, partnering with a charity. Kids can come down and donate a gift and all sorts of different things. So huge potential. And it's a pretty exciting project to be working on.
Will you be having a look at what happens with the AFL with their Good Friday, their move into Good Friday to work out, you know, what the lay of the land is?
Possibly. I think the AFL obviously did a great job, you know, many years ago now with Anzac Day, and the way that they really, I guess, brought a new interest and a more respect and prestige around that day. So the area that we've spent most time looking at the moment is actually what the NBA do on Christmas Day in the US. You know, we saw just a couple of days ago, they actually had 5 games across the country.
Is that what you're looking at? You're going to have games across the country at different time zones to bring them in, Anthony?
Well, not initially, no. But, you know, for something that started, it's actually been around for 40 years. I think a lot of people think that it's a recent innovation in the NBA, but they've been doing it for a long time. Probably not 5 games in year one, but, you know, they do it really well. It's respectful to what else is going on that day, and it's become a great feature. You know, we certainly don't make any apology for looking to what others are doing and learning from that and seeing how that may or may not be applicable to BBL.
Is because it's a graveyard area for television, and let's be honest, the BBL has turned it from a non-graveyard area to obviously a very lucrative area for television. Would they be keen on Christmas Day, do you know?
I suspect they would be. We haven't had any meaningful discussions with Channel 10 about it.
Okay.
I think Dave Barham's on record as saying he likes the idea, and I think he even went as far as to say if any sport can do it, you know, BBL can, given the innovative nature of what we're dealing with. But, myself, I was on the couch a couple of nights ago watching National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, and don't get me wrong, it's a great movie, but year after year, a bit of variety wouldn't go astray.
You and me both. It is a good movie, but I can only see that cat cooked underneath that chair. Only once a lifetime's probably enough, or maybe twice.
Maybe they could run that as the lead-in so nobody misses out on their
Yeah. Is there anything about the BBL at the moment that you're looking at that you want to fine-tune?
Look, we're always fine-tuning. I mean, we're still such a young league. Again, we sort of look around to some of our peers and, you know, we're looking at leagues that have been around for over 100 years and have really established themselves. So it's very much part of the learning curve for us. The key to the success of BBL is we've been really focused on our strategy right from day one, and that's all about attracting new fans to cricket. You know, cricket's fortunate that it is Australia's national sport and we already dominate the summer period. But there was a real opportunity to capture a new market, and we've been very, very focused on families and younger kids. And I'm not sure whether you've been to a game yourself, but looking around the crowd, it's just, you know, thousands of young boys and girls having a great time, jumping around, smiling, and that's really what we're focused on. The more that we can capture the hearts and minds and the attention of those young fans, and then translate that interest, that initial interest, into either participation or perhaps other forms of the game, that's where we see the biggest opportunities.
Yeah, and that, I mean, you're not fighting against the other forms of the game, you're actually, you know, fighting to help the other forms of the game.
Look, very much so. I actually think the real sort of legacy of BBL may not actually be felt for another 5 or 10 years.
I agree.
it's all the kids who are coming along today in their in their thousands, and they'll hopefully become lifelong cricket fans, and that really won't translate into attendances in the other forms for a few years just yet. But it's an exciting time.
Anthony, expansion team-wise and expansion time-wise, are they two things on the agenda?
Probably the latter is. We've spoken about expansion for a couple of years now, and I think we've been pretty clear in saying that we're not in a rush. We're really encouraged by the success of the BBL over the last few years, and we have very high aspirations for the future of this competition, but it's got to be sustainable, and it's also got to be linked back to the strategy. I think we're sort of cautious of perhaps other leagues, whether it's in Australia or around the world, that may have expanded too quickly. We still think there's plenty of upside in the existing format that we've got, but we're fortunate that we've got a competition that is, owned and operated fully by Cricket Australia, and we can structure it in such a way into the future that really addresses the broader needs of Australian cricket.
The expansion team-wise, would you be looking at say a second team in Queensland, but not necessarily in Brisbane, those sorts of things?
Oh, look, there's two options available to us. We could certainly look at introducing sort of more derbies. So obviously Melbourne and Sydney have got their two teams already in place. But whether it's Brisbane, Adelaide or Perth, opportunities in that regard. Or we could actually look at opening up new markets. And I think there's already been a lot of public interest expressed from the likes of Geelong, Canberra, the Gold Coast. And as recently as just a few weeks ago, we had a group from Fremantle contact us. So there are a number of different paths we could go down, but to be honest, we haven't really done enough work at this stage to progress those in any meaningful way. Our focus is on this season at hand, and those will be discussions we'll pick up once we're done in a few weeks' time.
Anthony, I want you to hold that thought for 1 minute. There's been a very special moment happened just now at the MCG.
An Australia-Pakistan Test Cricket Update.
Graham Smokey Dawson, what's going on?
Yes, the skipper's just registered his 17th Test century, Kev. 100 from 168 deliveries, 9 fours Australia, 6 for 464, leading by 21 runs. Wonderful knock by Steve Smith. And the umpires consulted just before that delivery about the light. So the weather is threatening, and I think the roof will be closed at Etihad tonight for the Big Bash game the Renegades are hosting down there. So, well done. The skipper's 100. And since I was last with you, Matthew Wade out, caught its first slip by Asad Shafiq off Sohail Khan for 9. Mitch Stark has hit a 6 to get off the mark. Thank you very much. And a 6 for 464.
SEN Summer of Cricket, the High and Mighty, the big and tall end-of-year sale on now. And Ashley and Martin, for a free consultation, call 13GROW.
Anthony Everhart is the head of the BBL. I knew you wouldn't mind that little special moment in Test cricket there with the Australian skipper scoring 100. Hopefully,
he's having a fair year, isn't he?
Yeah, he's having a fair career, just quietly. Tez has scored runs at a very quick rate in his Test career. It's a pity you don't have him playing in the BBL though, and that's probably the one area that need to talk about just to finish this up, Anthony. How do we get Warner, Smith, Stark playing BBL?
If I had a simple answer to that, we probably would have done it a few years ago. the reality is at the moment that the two formats do overlap. The best we can do at the moment is those Test players who won't be playing one-day cricket in January will obviously come back to their BBL teams in a couple of weeks, and we've obviously got the ODI guys in the system at the moment. So it's something that I guess we would love to see, but I think everything points to the fact at the moment that we're not reliant on them.
No.
And if anything, it actually provides opportunities for young guys to actually step up onto what is now a very big stage in terms of huge crowds and massive TV audiences and show their wares. And Chris Lynn was that player a few years ago.
Yep.
Travis Head was that player last year. And it'll be interesting to see who steps up over the next few weeks to take the opportunity.
Yeah, no doubt there will be someone. Anthony, appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
No worries. Good to speak to you.
Anthony Everhart there, the head of the BBL.